8 through 12 Appropriations Subcommittee will come to order. Kiva, please call roll.
Chair Tomko?
Here.
Vice Chair Tuck?
Here.
Ranking Member Williams?
Here.
Representatives Alvarez?
Here, ma'am.
Bracy Davis?
Here.
Kennedy?
Here.
Daly?
Here.
Daniels?
Here.
Dunkley?
Here.
Garcia? Gonzalez-Pittman? Lopez?
Here.
Michael? Rizzo?
Here.
Temple?
Here.
A quorum is present, Madam Chair.
A quorum being present, I want to welcome everyone to the Pre-K through 12 Appropriations Subcommittee. Please make sure that all cell phones and other communication devices are turned off or on silent mode. Well, good afternoon, members, and welcome to our fourth interim subcommittee meeting. Today's meeting has two very important agenda items. First is the presentation of the governor's recommended budget for fiscal year 23 through 24, and our second is an overview of Florida's K through 12 choice scholarship programs. To make this presentation, we have Shelby Cecil, the Education Policy Coordinator in the Executive Office of the Governor, and our Commissioner of Education, Manny Diaz, which I just want to say thank you so much for being here today. I know each of us here on this committee just send so many prayers to you and your family, and it means a great deal for you to be here in front of us today, and we all love you and just hope that you know that. And with that, I would like to welcome you both, and you're recognized, Shelby.
Good afternoon.
Hi.
Great. As the chair mentioned, I'm Shelby Cecil. I'm the policy coordinator in the Governor's Office of Education. Governor's Office of Policy and Budget in the Education Unit. As chair mentioned, I'm going to introduce the slides, give you an overall picture of the state's budget, and then I am going to pass it over to Commissioner Diaz to go into some more of the key highlights of the education budget. Joining me today, I do have some of my staff as well as the Department of Education, so I'd like to thank them all for being here, helping us go through this and craft this budget. So just make sure I'm here. Sorry. While your committee is just pre-K-12, the Office of Policy and Budget does handle early learning through higher education. So we do work with the Department of Education as well as the Board of Governors. So we will be doing presentations in the Higher Education Committee as well on that aspect of the budget. This slide is going to present two pie charts for you. On the left is an overall look at the entirety of the state's budget, which is $114.8 billion, of which the orange slice is education, which represents 26.5% of the state's budget, or $30.4 billion of the total state budget. The pie chart on the right is the total general revenue budget, which is $42.4 billion. Almost half of that goes to education. You'll see about 46%. $19 billion is appropriated in our higher education, pre-K through higher education budget. Speaking of, this is the breakout of the entirety of the education budget. Pre-K-12 is going to be more on the left side of the budget there. You'll see public schools take up more than 50% at 56.6%. Early learning comes in at about 6%. And then on the right side of the budget will be those higher education aspects that we will cover in Higher Education Committee. So I'm going to bring up the commissioner now, but we'll be here to answer any questions once we're done.
Thank you, Ms. Cecil.
Madam Chair, it's an honor to be before you and your committee. Biased maybe towards this committee and some of its staff, but I appreciate your kind words and for allowing us to present the governor's budget. So slide five is early learning, the early learning budget. We will start first with the investments in our youngest learners, such as those enrolled in school readiness and voluntary pre-kindergarten programs. The framework for Freedom budget includes a total of almost $451 million for Florida's VPK program to help prepare more than 155,000 four- and five-year-old students for kindergarten. This investment maintains the base student allocation at $2,803 for the school year program and $2,393 per student for the summer program. The budget also maintains funding for the following initiatives: $4.5 million for the Help Me Grow to connect children and families with information resources and developmental services to enhance health, behavior, and learning in the development of young children, That's an increase of $2.6 million. $10 million for the TEACH program to provide scholarships for early childhood professionals to work toward earning a degree and credentials in early childhood education. And $3.9 million for HIPPE program to deliver high-quality school readiness curriculum directly to families to strengthen early literacy schools of at-risk children ages 3 to 5. In the K-12 space, under the governor's leadership, Florida continues to be the education state. Florida's education system has been ranked number one in education freedom, continuing to secure the title of number one higher education system in the nation. Governor DeSantis, through his budget, will continue to build upon Florida's past success by protecting parents' fundamental rights by providing high-quality educational choices for all students, supporting and elevating the teaching profession, and ensuring Florida's schools and teachers have the tools they need to ensure students are prepared for their future. That is why his budget recommendation provides a historic investment in our K-12 education system of $26 billion. This includes funding to ensure Florida students are afforded every opportunity necessary to get an education that best fits their needs. This includes the highest per student investment of $8,453 in the FEFP, which is an increase of $205 over fiscal year 22-23. Governor DeSantis is once again acknowledging the hardworking educators by investing an additional $200 million for a total of $1 billion for teacher pay. Under the governor's proposal, school districts will be provided flexibility to utilize the increase in their allocation of the additional $200 million in funding to provide salary increases to eligible teachers and other instructional personnel in a manner that best fits each school district's needs. The budget also includes increases in key areas of our FEFP, an increase of $121 per student in the base student allocation, which provides school districts with additional flexible funding of $409.5 million, an increase of $20 million for a total of $160 million to ensure our students' mental health needs are being met, an increase of $40 million for a total of $250 million for safe school initiatives, and an increase of $20 million for a total of $535 million for student transportation. The governor has remained committed to ensuring that Florida students and teachers can learn in a safe learning environment and that our students are receiving the best education possible. That is why the governor has recommended the following key investments spanning the pre-K-20 landscape. The budget includes $487.3 million in the following school safety initiatives: $250 million, an increase of $40 million for the Safe Schools allocation; $160 million, an increase of $20 million for the mental health allocation; $6.5 million is maintained for the Coach Aaron Feist Guardian Program, of which there are currently 46 districts participating, and I'm proud to say four in the process of getting there; $5.5 million is maintained for the Youth Mental Health Awareness and Assistance Training; $845,000 is maintained for the Florida Safe Schools Assessment Tool; $3 million is maintained to continue providing centralized integrated data repository; $42 million, an increase of $22 million, is provided for public school hardening grants; $6.4 million is maintained to continue providing school districts access to a mobile panic alert system that is capable of connecting multiple first responder agencies; $3 million is provided for the procurement of a statewide transparency tool to support the implementation of HB 7, HB 1467, and HB 1557. $10 million is provided for the Office of Safe Schools to implement the following school safety initiatives: to secure statewide student safety and support portal, to create a web-based tool to satisfy SESR reporting, and to create a threat management system. The governor is continuing to stress the importance of having high-quality educators by supporting initiatives that recruit, retain, and reward public school teachers. This includes civics engagement initiatives, training, and bonuses for computer science. The governor's Heroes in the Classroom bonus initiative, a scholarship for teachers to further their education, and a new apprenticeship program to attract new teachers. In civic engagement, the budget maintains $1 million in funding to continue the Florida Civics and Debate Initiative. This initiative will create and expand existing speech and debate programs with a focus on civic education. In addition, the budget includes $3.5 million in funding to provide support in school districts for the improvement of civic literacy for Florida students using regional civic literacy captains and coaches. Computer science, professional development, and bonuses. The budget maintains $10 million to certify teachers to teach computer science and to provide bonuses to teachers who hold educator certificates or industry certifications in computer science. Heroes in the classroom. The budget provides $10 million to implement first-come, first-served recruitment bonus for retired military veterans and retired first responders who commit to joining the teaching profession. Heroes are required to teach a minimum of 2 years. The program will provide a bonus of $4,000 for up to 2,000 military veterans and retired first responders. Provide an additional $1,000 for 1,000 individuals teaching in areas of high demand, and waive the initial certification and exam fees for first responders, which is currently a benefit for military veterans and their spouses. The dual enrollment scholarship. The budget provides for $3.5 million to allow certified public school teachers to pursue a master's degree and become qualified to offer college-level dual enrollment general education courses on the high school campus. Teacher apprenticeship program and mentor bonuses. The budget provides a total of $9 million toward the creation of a teacher registered apprenticeship program and provides bonuses to our veteran teachers that mentor these new apprentice teachers. Thank you for the opportunity to present the highlights of Governor DeSantis' Framework for Freedom Education budget recommendation. This budget represents the governor's commitment to Florida families, students, educators. His investments indicate his support of our early learning systems through 20 and our partners and the work that they do to help students succeed and reach their goals. We look forward to working with you and your teams as we craft Florida's fiscal year budget 23-24. Thank you again.
Thank you so much, Commissioner. Members, I'll open it up to questions if you have a question. Representative Dunkley, you are recognized.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you so much for the overview. I just had one question, and hopefully it is prudent to ask it here. On the slide 7, where we have the Heroes in Classroom Bonus Initiative, is there a plan that will track how long those heroes stay in the program, since they're only mandated for 2 years with the bonus?
You're recognized.
Madam Chair, for clarity, the question is, is there a way to track beyond the 2 years? There's a mandatory requirement that the teacher serve for 2 years after receiving the bonus. I would prefer or ask for clarity on the extent of that.
You're recognized for clarity.
Thank you, and I'm sorry. So I was just asking, is there a plan that is factored or that will be factored, you know, to track how long they will be, those people who are heroes that are in the classroom will be staying in the program, if that's factored? I'm just asking.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We will be able to track that as participants come into the program and become eligible and receive that award. Obviously, they have the 2 year minimum, but they are designated as coming into that Heroes program. So we will be able to know who is a participant in the program, and through the districts find out how many years they continue to be employed. Ultimately, the districts are the employer, not the department, but we are able to communicate with the districts and obtain that data.
Follow up? Nope. Any further questions? Representative Michaels, you are recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Commissioner. There were a few items that you spoke on concerning the military. I understand, I got this one with the heroes in the classroom, but they were not on the slides that we have in front of us. Could you just go over those a little bit more? I have a military base that falls within my district, so I'm very interested in that.
You're recognized.
Thank you.
Representative, if I may, there were a couple of items that were on a previous iteration of this presentation that are actually in the higher education budget, so they were removed from this presentation. But Chris Spencer did go into details on those in his full appropriations presentation this morning, and we're happy to follow up with you on any questions related to those. So.
Ranking Member Williams, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to go back to where Representative Dunkley was talking about the Heroes in the Classroom bonus. What's the amount of the bonus per person that they will be receiving?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The Heroes bonus, it's a bonus of $4,000 up to 2,000 participants. So each bonus is $4,000, but it budgets for up to 2,000 participants.
Okay.
You're recognized for a follow-up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And because we have a shortage on teachers, do we have anything that's built in the budget that will recruit retired teachers, since we're recruiting military personnel and first responders? Do we have anything that would recruit our retired teachers?
You're recognized.
Any type of bonus?
Madam Chair, I would say that retired teachers, the job of the department is to certify teachers and make them available for our districts. When we say we attract teachers to the profession, make sure that we streamline the process of getting them certified. But at the end of the day, they're hired by each district, and each district has individual needs. In cases where districts have individual needs and they have retired teachers geographically that they would like to retain, there are ways for them to do that currently, and we can work with those districts to try to facilitate that. But that is something that is done on the local level, because they're the ones that have the individual needs of what openings they have at each school, at each district, et cetera.
Well, follow up, you're recognized.
Thank you. Yes, sir, and I understand and I do agree with you. But because I see that we have $10 million that we are setting aside for heroes to actually come in the classroom, I would consider our teachers, retired ones, as heroes themselves. So what my question was, do we have any additional money, bonuses set aside for teachers that has retired to come back to the classroom?
This budget that is before you includes the Heroes in the Classroom. It is obviously the prerogative of the legislature to come up with, to craft the budget and appropriate, and if that's the program, then that would be something that may come from the legislature.
Okay. Follow.
You're recognized.
Thank you. Another question. The budget itself decreased the VPK funding approximately $2 million. Was those $2 million that was decreased from the budget, is that non-reoccurring or reoccurring funds?
You're recognized.
Madam Chair. That is actually what you're seeing there is a result of the estimating conference that estimates the number of births and the timing of those students entering the pre-K. And so while the per student allocation remains the same, they are projecting that there's going to be a decline at this moment in the students. So what you're seeing is a result of volume of lesser students being projected. That doesn't reflect what may happen in reality, but that is how we function with the estimating conference.
Follow up, you're recognized.
Thank you very much. For the proposal of a 100 position increase for the State Board of Education, can you give me additional information on that, please?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Could you point to where?
Representative, a couple of years ago, House Bill 419 moved the division or the Office of Early Learning into the Department of Education as the Division of Early Learning. So this is transferring all of those Division of Early Learning staff into DOE proper.
Okay, very good. Thank you very much. When you talked about the different types of school safety initiative, $487 million, and school safety allocation increase for $40 million. What's the difference between the two?
You're recognized.
We have a combination of school safety initiatives since the passing of the Marjory Stoneman Douglas Act, in which we created an allocation that schools can use to provide a sheriff's deputy or an officer at each school. Also, there's mental health provisions that are another categorical that was a product of that. At the same time, there's the addition of the funds in the Aaron Feist program, the Youth Mental Health Awareness Assistance Program, the assessment tool, and the data repository, not to mention that there are additional dollars for school hardening that are done through a grant separately, where schools can apply to fence up the school, provide cameras, those kind of hardening initiatives that are provided to make a school safer.
Follow up, you're recognized.
Okay, speaking of the mental health, is the mental health increase for the $20 million, is that for teachers or that's for students to be used?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That is an allocation within the FEFP to provide mental health services for students.
Do we have anything that we mentioned in the budget for teachers?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Not to my knowledge.
There is, Chair, for me.
You're recognized.
Representative, there is $5.5 million that the commissioner did mention. It's for youth mental health awareness and assistance training. That is to help teachers identify the warning signs of a student who may need a little bit more support when it comes to whatever may be happening in their life at the time.
Follow up, Rep. Williams, or?
No.
No?
I'll come back.
Okay. Do you have any other questions? Representative Garcia, you're recognized.
Hi, Commissioner Diaz. I was wondering, we're having so much immigration that we were not expecting, and today I was visited from Miami-Dade County Public Schools, and they're telling me that they already have 14,000 new students enrolled and that they need the ESOL programs. Have we made any provisions for all of that new immigration of students that we're having, especially in Miami-Dade County?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, as normal increase in enrollment to a district in the February count, they will receive their FEFP allocation for the count that they have. In other words, they're going to be funded for the students that they have. I have also had conversations with board members there, and superintendent has concern as to other federal services that may come along with those students, and that is something that the district is going to have to advocate for the federal government to provide for those services, but they will be funded from the state as of the count. So they're actually going to have an increase in enrollment, which means they'll have an increase of funding for those students.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Bracey Davis, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Commissioner, for that presentation. Could you, and this is a question in, I guess, two parts, could you do a little deeper dive on the page 5, Teacher Education and Compensation Helps Program, the TEACH program? It sounds like this is somewhat of a recruitment incentive. If you could give a little bit more detail on how that works. And then to kind of partner with Rep. Williams' question as it relates to the Heroes in Classrooms initiative. So it sounds like both of these two are incentive programs, and are there any other incentive programs as it relates to recruitment and getting more teachers?
You're recognized.
Thank you. So on the $10 million for TEACH program is to provide, when we're talking about professionals, folks that already work within the early learning community, this is to provide them the ability to gain higher credentials to be able to take other positions within the early learning system so that they are, for lack of a better word, a teacher in that system. They may be assisting or maybe doing something else, but it's this scholarship to provide an enhancement of that person's professional credentials for them to be able to take on that position. As far as programs for recruitment of teachers, enticement of teachers, the governor has invested over the last 3 years in his budget, and the legislature has appropriated and the governor has signed. Now He's asking for $1 billion in that teacher salary allocation. It would be a total of $3 billion, which is a tremendous increase for teachers in our state to go directly to teachers. And I think that's one component of recruiting teachers, as well as the HEROES program, as well as the apprenticeship program, because just like we have folks sitting in the early learning setting that may not have the credentials, by having an apprenticeship program, we can now take a paraprofessional or a substitute teacher or someone who is clearly interested in education and provide them not only a pathway to gain their credentials, but also to have a master teacher, a mentor teacher, to really hone the real skills that are required. Because, you know, we know that when you leave a classroom in college and you get the keys to the classroom and that teacher's edition, because I can tell you from experience, and you walk in, there's a class full of 30 kids, the stuff that you learned in college, while maybe valuable, it's not going to be of the value of real-time experience and having a mentor. So I think those components right there are extremely valuable and important in recruiting teachers into the classroom, especially when we already have them somewhere within the school building or within the school performing another duty and clearly showing an interest in education.
Follow-up? Okay. Representative Williams?
Madam Chair, I have a list of questions here. On the budget itself for compression funding for whole homeless, I see that it has been zeroed out from last year. Can you explain that to me?
You're recognized.
Yes, ma'am. So this past year, that provision was actually eliminated in one of the conforming bills that was published with the 22-23 budget. So this FEFP run just conforms with that.
Follow-up?
I'm sorry, Madam Chair. Yes.
You're recognized.
So are they going to be able to use their money? Or?
You're recognized.
No, ma'am. As that provision was stricken from law, the allocation no longer is in the FEFP.
Follow-up? You're recognized.
Thank you very much. As you, I'm trying to keep my little notes together. I'm back on the mental health portion of it. Do we have a breakdown of how that money could actually be used? Could we use it as wellness or well-being or behavior or apprenticeship programs, or is that part of the same allocation, or is it something totally different?
You're recognized.
Representative, are you asking about the mental health allocation
in
the FEFP? Yes, ma'am. So there are requirements in law as to how a school district has to use those fundings. They're very prescriptive, but the majority of the funding does go to school counselors and other guidance counselors for students.
Right, Representative Williams, I'm going to ask you to pick your two favorite questions that you have left.
I'll have a meeting outside.
Okay, wonderful. Members, do we have any further questions? Seeing none, thank you both so much for being here today. We really appreciate it. And Commissioner, as I said before, we will keep you and your family in our prayers.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Well, members, from one presentation on to the next. Sorry, Ryan. Got ahead of myself there. Members, during our February interim meetings, we'll be doing presentations that will help prepare for our fiscal issues that may become before this committee as we move into regular session. So today's presentation is on our choice scholarship programs. Florida, like some other states, has two types of funded choice scholarship programs. The first is a tax credit funded program. These are programs which allow individuals or corporations to receive a tax credit from state taxes against donations made to nonprofit scholarship funding organizations. Florida has two such funded programs, the Florida Tax Credit Scholarship Program and the HOPE Scholarship Program. The second type is a state-funded program. These are programs that either use the state funds per student appropriated in the FEFP or other non-FEFP funds. Florida's two programs are the Family Empowerment Scholarship, Program and the New Worlds Reading Scholarship Program. For purposes of this presentation, I am going to concentrate on our state's two biggest programs, the Florida Tax Credit Scholarship Program and the Family Empowerment Scholarship Program. On this next slide, as I'm sure the majority of you know, the Florida Tax Credit Scholarship Program, or FTC, was established in 2001 as a mechanism to expand educational opportunities for children of families with limited financial resources. The initial income level requirement was students who qualified for the free and reduced lunch program, which means their household income level was at or below 185% of the federal poverty level, or FPL. Since its original establishment, several legislative changes have been made to the program to include in 2021, allowing the FPL to increase by 25 percentage points in the fiscal year following any fiscal year in which more than 5% of the available scholarships have not been funded. As a result of this change, for fiscal year 22 to 23, the eligible household income level cannot exceed 400% of the FPL. It is important to note that, however, that funding priority is still given to students whose household income level is at or below 185% of the FPL. On the right side of this slide is the 2022 annual maximum income cap for the different household sizes as published by Step Up for Students, which is one of the state scholarship funding organizations. Slide 4 shows a 10-year history of the number of the FTC scholarships funded in each year. You will notice that starting in fiscal year 20 through 21, the total number of funded FTC scholarships start to decline, which in part is due to the establishment of the Family Empowerment Scholarship Program. On the next slide, for the same 10-year period, this slide shows the total amount of tax credit revenue used to fund the corresponding number of FTC scholarships. On slide 6, starting in fiscal year 19 through 20, more detailed data had been provided on the FTC program to include the total amount of funds available to the scholarship funding organizations to fund scholarships and the total amount of funds actually used. As a result of this additional information, my first takeaway is that based on data reported by the two scholarship funding organizations, there appears to be a capacity to fund more FTC scholarships. Turning now to the Family Empowerment Scholarship Program, established in 2019, this program also educational opportunities to children of families with limited financial resources. The difference between this program and the FTC program is the following. The Family Empowerment Scholarship Program is a state-funded program in the FEFP and not a tax credit-funded program. For fiscal year 19 through 20, a total of 18,000 scholarships was a statutory cap, and beginning in fiscal year 20 through 21, that cap can increase by 1% of the total public school student enrollment. In 2021, the FES programs and eligibility was expanded to also include students with disabilities, essentially merging the Gardner and McKay scholarship programs into the FES program. As a result of the 2021 legislation, two different eligibility paths were established. The FES, the Educational Options or EO based on eligible household income levels, the FES Unique Abilities, or UA, based on qualifying disability. Subsequent legislative changes have been made to both the FES EO and FES UA programs. As a result, for the current fiscal year, the eligible household income level for FES EO program cannot exceed 400% of the FPL. However, it bears repeating that funding priority is still given to students whose household income level is at or below the 185% of the FPL. The FPL can increase by 25 percentage points in the fiscal year following any fiscal year in which more than 5% of the statutory cap scholarships are not funded. And for the current year, the FES EO statutory cap is $104,807. However, several types of students can be awarded a scholarship that do not count against this cap. For the FES UA program, the current year statutory cap is $26,500, which can annually increase by 1% of the eligible ESE student enrollment. And similar to the FES EO program, certain types of students can be awarded an FES UA scholarship that do not count against the cap. Slide 8 shows the total number of FES EO scholarships awarded for each of the program's 4 years. This bar graph breaks the total number funded between those that were included and excluded from the statutory cap. So for current year, of the 88,051 funded, just under 50,000 were included in the cap. Slide 9 displays the statutory cap for each of the 4 years and the total number of FES EO scholarships funded that count against the cap. This next slide displays a 10-year history of funding data for the scholarship programs for students with disabilities. Starting in fiscal year 13 through 14, the McKay Scholarship was the only available scholarship until Gardner was established in fiscal year 14 through 15. Starting in fiscal year 21 through 22, the Gardner program was merged into the FES UA program, with the McKay program following fiscal year 22 through 23. This fiscal year also shows the breakdown of the funded scholarships that were included in the statutory cap and those that were not. The final two slides of my presentation are two more important takeaways. Takeaway number two is that 71% of the state's K through 12 eligible student population currently qualifies for either an FES EO or FTC scholarship. Based upon a breakdown of the population by percent of the FPL, 36% are at or below 185% of the FPL, and 35% above 185%, and up to 400% of the FPL. Bottom line, almost three-fourths of the state's eligible K through 12 student population currently qualifies based on household income level. And takeaway number three has two parts. For the first part, the data shows that for the FES EO scholarship program, more students are funded outside of the statutory cap. As the slide indicates, the percentage of students awarded a scholarship that does not count against the cap continues to increase. And for the second part, for the FES UA scholarship program, the annual statutory cap increase may need to be adjusted. Looking at the forecasted statutory cap for fiscal year 23 through 24, it is uncertain if the number of new FES UA scholarships would address the anticipated waitlist. And members, this concludes my presentation. Well, members, do we have any questions? All right. Seeing none, members are, oh, we have one. Too good to be true.
Madam Chair, thank you. What's the accountability and transparency for measuring requirement for school receiving funds for the tax credit and family empowerment vouchers?
Can you please repeat the question?
What type of accountability and transparency for measurements that we have in place for?
In statute, we have a requirement that is placed in law. And that has not changed. You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I wanted to ask under the FEF, and I know you mentioned the 185 poverty line and the 400% of the FPL. I wanted to ask along the line of Rep. Williams, what is the accountability measures that we will put in place to facilitate that schools keep that equity level
for the students that are coming in using those scholarship funds.
Representative, just as I shared with Representative Williams, that is a policy question and one that we in statute have taken care of, and it is by law what we have to abide by.
Thank you.
General question, Madam Chair.
You're recognized.
When we have students that starts out with the FTE classes at a school and they get halfway completed and then they go back to the public school system, will the money follow that child, or is it a split for the funding, or how does that work?
The money follows the child.
Even after the midterm, I think it's two times they actually...
Just like we do currently in public schools, yes.
Okay, so it's no changes to it.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What is the average award for a student in the FESOS?
$7,800. Follow up, you're recognized.
Thanks, Madam Chair. What is the average award for a student in the tax credit program?
That's the same.
It's the same, okay. And then one final.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What is the average award for a student in the FES UA program?
About 10.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
You're recognized.
Can a child qualify for more than one?
No. Chomping at the bit there, Ranking Member Williams. Well, members, thank you so much for listening to these two presentations today. Our next subcommittee meeting is scheduled for Wednesday, February 15th from 11:30 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. And this concludes our committee agenda. Is there any further business before our committee? Seeing none, Representative Daniels moves we rise, and without objection, the meeting is adjourned.